years, I have just grown more and more concerned about the work ethic that I see all around me and in a great number of people. And when I say that, I'm not leaving myself out of that as I speak this morning about reviving your work ethic. And so I'll be preaching to all of us who are working in any kind of way, whether it be in the kingdom or whether it be in regular jobs. But I just think it's important to talk about that because I tell you, I don't think that I'm the only one who senses this thing going on throughout our country. Recently, I read an interview that was done with Eric Chester. He is the founder of RevivingWorkEthic.com. And basically what he does is he's just trying to teach young people especially the kind of work ethic that you need to have. And he's helping them to transition from school to work because there's a lot of difference in what you do maybe in college and then what you're going to do when you start your job or what you do in high school and then transition to a job. I want to share a few things with you as I begin the lesson that was interesting as I looked at the interview that was done with him. And among the things that was said, one of the things was America has lost sight of the virtues that compromise the work ethic, the very things that help build our country. In fact, some time ago, Tom Brokaw came out with a book that was called The Greatest Generation. And he believes the greatest generation that this country has ever seen is the World War II generation. Because you had people that were hardworking, they loved this country to the core, they were supportive, they did everything that they could to help other families, they were neighborly, and he argues that they are the greatest generation that this country has ever seen. Now, there may be some who want to debate that, but that was at least what he said. And I think that this statement here reflects some of that America has lost sight of the virtues that compromise the work ethic, the very things that help to build our country. Here's another thing that was said. Many employers describe their current workforce and labor pool with terms like this. They act like they are entitled. They're disengaged. They're unmotivated. And they have no loyalty. And this is what they're using to describe so much of the current things that they're dealing with in the work world. Referring to millennials, which is the current generation, and maybe going back a few years, millennials have amazing skill sets, but they don't always want to work. And when they do, their terms don't always line up with those of their employers. And I'll just have to say briefly that I think that's what I see a lot of myself. I see a whole lot of people who want the money, but they don't want to work. And so here's what you have is people who have amazing skill sets. The ability that they have, the things that they've learned, what they are able to do is incredible, but they don't want to work. And when they do work, their terms of what they're going to do and what their boss wants them to do are two totally different things. And so the employer and the employee oftentimes are not connected at all in that regard. They were asked this question, millennials were, what makes your generation unique? And what was interesting is that previous generations all said at least somewhere in the top five things that they thought made their generation unique, said work ethic. But millennials never said anything about work ethic being one of the things that makes us unique. What they did say was this. What made them unique was technology use, music, pop culture, liberal and tolerant beliefs, greater intelligence. That's a little bit of a slap. And clothes. These are the things that they said made them unique, and work ethic did not even make the list. This man that I mentioned to you, Eric Chester, said that he has talked to over 1,500 employers, and here's what they say. We are searching for positive, enthusiastic people who show up for work on time. They're dressed and they are prepared properly. They go out of their way to add value and they do more than what's required of them. They are honest, they will play by the rules, and they will give cheerful, friendly service regardless of the situation. He says that's what we're looking for, and that's the thing that we are having a hard time finding. He says, really, you can take this and reduce it down to seven words. that we are looking for that we're having a hard time finding. And that is, we're looking for people who have the right attitude. They are reliable. They are professional. They take initiative. They show respect. They have integrity. And they have gratitude. They have gratitude for the very job that they have. And so those are the seven things that he finds that most employers are looking for. What I want to do today in the time that I have is I just want to share four things. I want to share four things today that all of us who are working need to bring. These are things we need to bring if we're going to bring our A game when it comes to the work that we do, whether it be in the kingdom of Jesus Christ or whether it be in our regular jobs, which, by the way, is also work in the kingdom of Jesus Christ. Let me stress this. This is also where you can have a great impact on other people. Most of you spend the most productive time of your day in the first portion, from the time you get up to the end of the day. It's the greatest time of strength. It's where you're spending some of your best hours, and you have so much influence during that time. That's the way it was for Jesus. You know, when you look at the Bible, you read about Jesus, and it talks about him at age 12. And then we read about Jesus at about age 30. He comes out to John to be baptized by John the Baptist at about age 30. And we all know what he did between 30 and 33. He's out there performing miracles, teaching the people, spreading the word about the kingdom of God. But here's the question. What was Jesus doing between age 12 and age 30? What was Jesus doing for 18 years of his life? Mark chapter 6 and verse 3 gives us the answer. In Mark chapter 6 and verse 3, Jesus has come to his hometown and he's preaching and he's being rejected by the people. They wonder where he gets the great wisdom that he has. How does he do all these mighty works? But then look at verse 3. Look at how they refer to Jesus. Mark 6 and verse 3. Is this not the carpenter? Is this not the carpenter, the son of Mary, and the brother of James, and Joseph, and Judas, and Simon? And are not his sisters here with us? And they were offended at him. Now, you know what Jesus was doing between age 12 and age 30? He was a carpenter. And I want to say something to you right here and now. That is just as sacred. That is just as sacred as what he was doing between age 30 and 33. And Jesus was not tapping his foot saying, when can I get done with this so I can finally get on with the business of doing God's work? That was God's work. Between age 12 and age 30, he was just as much on task doing what God would have him to do in those years as he was in the ages 30 to 33. And it's right here I want to say something as a major compliment to every single one of you. I hate this business of people referring to secular work. As though what this means is, now Jeff, you know, Jeff works for God. The rest of us, we just do secular work. Not so. There is no such thing as a job that is sacred and then jobs that are secular. If you're working, you're working for God. And what you do every day from the time you get up to the time you come home is just as important for you and the influence that you have in your place as compared to what I do and the influence that I had to try to have in my place. We're all working for God. And you need to know that, and you need to take great value in that. It is work that is done for God. Forget this secular and sacred. It's all sacred when you're working for God. And so this is where you are letting your light shine the most, people. As far as the world is concerned, this is where people are seeing you the most, is in that time. And it's crucial that you get certain things right during those work hours. Now let me give you four things. The first thing you need to bring to the table is you need to bring ability. I know that it can be hard to discover what it is that you really want to do. But once you find what you have passion for, the first thing that you absolutely must do is you must work on your ability to do that thing. Jesus learned his trade evidently from his father, because in another place he's referred to as the carpenter's son. And so no doubt Jesus did what most Jewish boys do. He was there working alongside his father. And by the way, we need to be trying to do that more. We need to make sure that we're doing that. One of the things that is happening in our country is parents are petting their children so much that children are not growing up learning how to work. Some time back, I was talking to somebody in the congregation, and she just made the comment that I have told my husband, look, I'm a woman. I'm a woman, and I don't know how to do this. I'm counting on you as the husband to teach our sons how to work. And what I really liked else that was said in that was they said that he had done a pretty good job of that, and that when those boys had to go back to school, that was actually a relief. It was easier to go to school and get up at that hour than it was to get up some of the hours that Dad was getting them up. And so you need to work on your ability. And Jesus was working with his father. Look at Matthew 13 and verse 55. Matthew the 13th chapter and verse 55. That simply says, is this not the carpenter's son? Is not his mother called Mary and his brothers James and Joseph and Simon and Judas? So he's the carpenter's son, and therefore he was a carpenter as well. Let me say this. You need to work hard to be the best at what you do. Will you ever be the best at what you do? I don't know. And God is not going to ask you to do more than what you are capable of doing. But every single one of us who work need to strive to work to be the absolute best at what we do. And here's my question. Why wouldn't you want to be? Why would you not want to be the very best at what you do? That nobody can touch your skills. Nobody can touch your quality. Nobody. And again, I'm not saying that you will attain to that. But you need to strive to be absolutely where you can be in your ability with the thing that you do. There are people everywhere who are looking for people who are good at what they do. So get good training before you begin work. Get you some good training. Or maybe as you're going along working, pay attention to the training that you're being given. Sometimes it's just an apprenticeship. They're just trying to teach you as you go. Get on it. Study up on it, even when you're not on the job. Read about it. Study beyond the time that you're there at work. Do the extra things that make you better and better and better. Take on some additional classes beyond the time that you are at work, if possible. Anything that you can do that just makes you good at what you do and you have the ability. There's a principle about Jesus in Mark chapter 7 and verse 37. Mark chapter 7 and verse 37. It just says concerning Jesus after he had healed this man, it says, they were astonished beyond measure, and they said, he has done all things well. And that's Jesus, people. He has done all things well. When you look at Jesus, Jesus is always teaching to us a standard of excellence. Everywhere in the Bible, it's obvious that Jesus is demanding excellence in everything that we do. Let me ask you something. What kind of stuff do you think Jesus turned out of that carpenter shop? You think Jesus did shoddy work? I doubt it, don't you? I don't have any problem picturing Jesus at the end of a day lifting up whatever it was that he had made to the God of heaven and saying, how does that look to you? I don't picture Jesus doing anything shoddy during those 18 years in which he was working and working for God. And the reason I say that is because Jesus never did anything shoddy. He has done all things well. So work hard to bring outstanding ability to the table. There are some people in the world who have tremendous ability, but they won't bring it. They won't bring it. Whatever the reason is, whether they feel entitled, whether they're just lazy or whatever it is, they won't bring it. They've got the ability, but they won't bring it. And that brings to the next point. We don't just need to have ability. There needs to be reliability. And this is one of the things that grates on my nerves the most. And that is unreliability. Just unreliable. Let me point out a few things that I think are important here. First of all, show up to work on time. Better yet, show up to work before it's time to be there. When you have to, leave late. Be willing to leave late if you have to. Give extra. Look at Jesus in Mark chapter 1. Jesus has already been up all night long, or at least all the whole evening. In Mark 1 and verse 32, now at evening when the sun had set, so it's evening time, the sun has set, they brought to him all who were sick and those who were demon-possessed, and the whole city was gathered together at the door. And he healed many who were sick with various diseases and cast out many demons. But he did not allow the demons to speak because they knew him. He's had a busy, busy, busy night. But look at verse 35. Now in the morning, having risen a long while before day, he went out, he goes to a solitary place, and there he prays. He wants to spend time with God. And then Simon and those who were with him searched for him, and when they found him, they said, everyone's looking for you. And he said, let us go into the next towns that I may preach there also, because for this purpose I have come forth. And he was preaching in their synagogues throughout all Galilee and casting out demons. Jesus was not a slacker. Jesus was reliable. He's worked hard all evening. He gets up early the next morning. He talks to God, and then he gets right back to work the next day. Give a little extra. In Mark chapter 5 and verse 41, Matthew chapter 5 is what I meant to say. Matthew chapter 5 and verse 41, again, a principle here. Jesus says, talking about a soldier who might come along and he's going to try to compel you to carry his cloak. Verse 41, he says, whoever compels you to go 1 mile, go with him too. So here he just compels you to go one, but you go two. There's a principle there of going the extra mile. Here's a second thing. Do what you've been hired to do when it is supposed to be done. You know how much stuff there is out there where people don't do what they've been hired to do, and they don't do it when it's supposed to be done. Here's another thing I think is important on reliability. If you can't do it by the time that you said, give a courtesy call and explain why you're not going to be able to do it when you said you would do it. If you're going to be running late for a job, give a courtesy call and say, hey, I'm going to be about 15 minutes late. A courtesy call. Return phone calls. Over the past couple of years, it's been amazing to me how many times I've called somebody and asked them to return my call, call again, and they say, okay, we'll give him the message. And then finally, you call, and he answers, and you say, hey, this is Jeff May. Oh, hey, Jeff, I was just about to call you. And I'm saying, yeah, I bet you were. I was just about to call you. You hear that kind of stuff all the time. Return phone calls and do your job right. Let me ask this question. As we talk about ability and reliability, what's the number one thing? What's the number one thing that ought to make the Christian the greatest worker in all of the world? And the most reliable worker in all the world. What is it that ought to do that for us? The answer is simple. It's because of who you work for. I'm going to read both sets of these passages. Look at Colossians chapter 3, beginning in verse 22. They say a lot of the same things, but there's enough difference to read both of them. In Colossians chapter 3, beginning in verse 22, it says, servants, obey in all things your masters according to the flesh. So in other words, do what the boss says. Not with eye service. That means you don't work like this. Oh, the boss is coming. Boss is coming. There's no reason to have to do that because you're working just as hard when His eye is on you as you are when His eye is not on you. You're working hard at all times, not with eye service, not as men pleasers. In other words, I'm not trying to do just enough to please the boss, but in sincerity of heart, fearing God. And whatever you do, do it heartily as to the Lord. Do it heartily. Get your heart in it. And then he says, knowing that from the Lord you will receive the reward of your inheritance, for you serve the Lord Christ. In other words, your paycheck's going to come from Jesus. You might not like your paycheck, but you got a good one coming. You got a wonderful one coming. You want to talk about a bonus? Verse 25, but he who does wrong will be repaid for the wrong which he does, and there is no partiality. And then he talks to the bosses. Masters, you give your servants what is just and fair, knowing that you also have a master that is in heaven. All right, now go to Ephesians 6. Again, it's going to be very similar, but worth reading because of some differences. Ephesians 6 and verse 5. Servants, be obedient to those who are your masters according to the flesh, with fear and trembling, in sincerity of heart, as to Christ. Not with eye service, not as men pleasers, but as servants of Christ, doing the will of God from the heart, with goodwill doing service as to the Lord. Can you see how many times he's saying you're doing it for the Lord, you're doing it for the Lord, you're doing it for the Lord? You will receive the same from the Lord whether you're slave or free. And you masters, you do the same things to them. You give up your threatening, knowing that you also have a master that's in heaven. By the way, if you're a boss, there's a boss that's watching you. There's a boss over the boss. And the boss is counting on you as a boss to treat your workers right and to do as he would have you to do in regard to that. Again, I have no trouble seeing Jesus finishing a day saying, how does that look to you? In Ecclesiastes 9 and verse 10, there's a principle found here in Ecclesiastes 9 and verse 10. It just talks about whatever your hand finds to do. Ecclesiastes 9 and verse 10. Where the Bible simply says, whatever your hand finds to do, do it with your might. For there is no work or device or knowledge or wisdom in the grave where you are going. And let me say this. These things that I'm telling you right now are things that we all need to bring to the table regardless of your job. I don't care what your job is. I don't care whether you like it or not. These are things you bring to the table regardless of what your job is and regardless of what the atmosphere is at your job. Somebody raises this question. Is it possible to work hard if you hate your job? Let me ask you this. Is it possible to work hard if you hate your job? Absolutely. But there are a lot of slackers out there who will not work because they're looking for the perfect job. And I'm going to go ahead and tell you this. If you're looking for the perfect job, you're not going to find it. It's not out there. And this is important to know too. You might have to work a job that you don't really like a whole lot until you get the job that you want. Sometimes you, oh, I don't want to do that. I won't do that. I won't do that. What are you going to do? A good job, in one sense, is a job that gives you money that allows you to take care of the things that you need to take care of, especially if you have a wife and a family. If you've got a job that's taking care of a lot of that, it's a good job, and you need to express gratitude for that job. The problem is, it seems that we have a lot of people in our society that are spoiled. They feel entitled. They want to pursue the American dream, but it's somehow owed to them. They're unthankful. Romans chapter 1, verse 21 mentions people who just became all sorts of things, and it started because they were unthankful. Turn to Acts 18, and I want to show you what even the Apostle Paul did at times. There were times when Paul, I guess, needed some help beyond what churches were able to supply him. What did he do? In Acts 18 and verse 1, it says, after these things, Paul departed from Athens and he went to Corinth, and he found a certain Jew named Aquila, born in Pontus, who had recently come from Italy with his wife Priscilla, because Claudius had commanded all the Jews to depart from Rome. And he came to them. And so because he was of the same trade, he stayed with them and he worked. For by occupation they were tent makers. So here he is during the week making tents. And then in verse 4, it says he reasoned in the synagogue every Sabbath and persuaded both Jews and Greeks. So here Paul is, he's willing to make tents. And in Acts 20, he says, I've shown you in every way by laboring like this with my hands that you must support the weak. And so the Apostle Paul didn't say, that's not what I want to do. It's just, I want to go to the synagogues and I want to preach. Well, right now he's making a tent because he needs to make his way. And so sometimes you have to be thankful for the job that just is a job. And be thankful for the God of heaven who gave you a job. Listen to this next statement. I should have put it on the screen. Passion doesn't fuel work ethic. Passion doesn't fuel work ethic. Work ethic fuels passion. What I'm saying here is there's some people who go, you know, well, I just don't have any passion for that, so... No! Somebody said that's like sitting in front of a fireplace that doesn't have any logs, doesn't have any fire. There's no fire in the fireplace. There's no wood there. And you say to yourself, once there's a fire here, I'll put in some logs. What do you mean once there's a fire, you'll put in some logs? Why don't you put in some logs so there'll be a fire? And so one of the best things you can do to get a fire for your job is to put in some logs. Don't wait for the fire before you decide you'll do something. Do something and get a fire. There's something about getting busy that will fuel the passion. Look at Proverbs 26 and verse 20 and 21. Proverbs 26, verse 20 and 21. This is on the principle of gossip, but it makes the same point. It says, where there's no wood, the fire goes out. A fire needs wood. Verse 21, as charcoal is to burning coals and wood to fire. And so you need to put in some fire. So the passion that you have for your job is directly related to the initiative that you're willing to put into it. Now let me say this, I realize that you can have a job that's just kind of the pits. You just don't like it a whole lot. But here's some other things that I think are important. Do whatever is within your control to eliminate the things that are demotivating you. Here's one of the things I'd suggest. Do not surround yourself with coworkers who complain all the time about the job and about the boss. Don't do lunch with them. Now, I realize we're trying to have some influence, and you need to spend some time with them. But as far as your attitude, you don't need to surround yourself with people who are talking about how bad the job is and how bad the boss is and how bad this is and that is and everything else. Don't do lunch with the downers. Because 1 Corinthians 15 and verse 33 has a principle that says evil companionships corrupt good morals. Who you spend time with is going to affect you. Let me show you an attitude that I think is good to have right here. Go to Nehemiah chapter 3 and verse 5. This is in the days of Nehemiah when they're trying to get that wall built around Jerusalem. Nehemiah chapter 3 and verse 5. Nehemiah chapter 3 and verse 5. It says in verse 5, next to them the Tekoites made repairs, but their nobles did not put their shoulders to the work of their Lord. So here's the Tekoites, and they've got nobles among them who won't put their shoulder to the work. What do you do when somebody else isn't working? What do you do when people around you aren't working like they're supposed to? The answer is found in verse 27. After them, the Tekoites repaired another section. In other words, if you won't take care of your one, I'll do two. They didn't say, well, you're not working, so I'm not going to work. You hate your job, so I do too. You hate your boss, I do too. No, they did what they were supposed to do. In Nehemiah chapter 4, look at verse 10. Judah said, the strength of the laborers is failing and there's so much rubbish we're not able to build the wall. So here's all this negativism coming. The laborers are failing. There's so much rubbish. We're just not able to build the wall. Our adversaries said they will neither know nor see anything till we come into their midst and kill them and cause the work to cease. And so it was that the Jews who dwelt near them came and they told us 10 times, from whatever place you turn, they'll be upon us. Verse 14, I looked and arose and said to the nobles and to the leaders of the rest of the people, do not be afraid of them. Remember the Lord your God, great and awesome, and fight for your brethren and your sons and your daughters and wives and your houses. He didn't let any negativism stop him from doing what he was supposed to do. And they built that wall in 52 days. In 52 days. If your break room feels like a jail cell, go in on your day off and paint it. Put up some motivational posters. What I'm saying is do something. Get out of the mindset that you're stuck. So many times you'll see somebody and they just say, I'm just stuck. I'm just stuck. You're not stuck. You don't have to work where you work. You're not stuck. The problem is between the ears. So many times the problem is right here. You can work hard. You can perform better. You can work in such a way that you might possibly get a promotion or, listen to this, or be sought after by somebody else. Do you realize that your future employers are going to ask about how you did on your present job? And if you didn't do what you were supposed to do on your present job that you don't like, how do you expect to get another one? Does he work hard? No. Does he have a good attitude? No. Does he come in on time? No. Well, why do I want him? You see, it's important that you always know who you're working for so that you do what you're supposed to do regardless of the situation. Do what makes you hireable to another person. In this piece that I read, this guy said this. I thought it was pretty good. He said, work like you're showing off. Approach your next shift as if your every move is being video recorded for the worldwide audience to see. Your parents, your kids, your friends, your future employers are all tuned in. Everybody's watching how you work. He says, go at it like that. If you perform your normal job as you would under these conditions for an entire day, it would be impossible to feel down and disengaged. In fact, it will be impossible for your employers not to notice you. And very soon, now I realize there can be exceptions to this, very soon you'll be the very best at your job. And once you are, you'll be promoted. You'll see a dramatic increase in your pay. You'll be sought out by other employers. And when you are at the best of your job, your future is unstoppable. Now I realize there's some places that may not always be the case. But I do believe this, I do believe your future is in your hands. If you follow the principles that God has given you, it'll pay off somehow, somewhere along the way. So do the right thing. Now he said there on that first thing, you need to work as if your every move is being video recorded. By the way, it is. God is recording every move you make on your job. He cares how you do on that job. He cares how I do in my job. And 2 Corinthians chapter 5 and verse 9 says that we need to make it our aim at all times to be pleasing to Him. Verse 5, therefore we make it our aim, whether present or absent, to be well pleasing unto Him. You are being video recorded by the God of heaven who doesn't miss anything. And it comes up at judgment. And by the way, I do believe how you work on your job is something that can come up at judgment, because He's given commandments as to how you're supposed to work. Reliability. Let me give you two more things. Integrity. Integrity. Titus chapter 2, verse 9 and 10 is a passage that could have started this lesson. Titus chapter 2, beginning in verse 9, exhort servants to be obedient to their own masters, to be well-pleasing in all things, not answering back, not pilfering, but showing all good fidelity. And then catch this, that they may adorn the doctrine of God our Savior in all things. So he says, obey your masters, Seek to be well-pleasing in all things. Don't answer back. Don't pilfer. Show good fidelity. Why? That you may adorn the doctrine of our God in all things. You make the gospel look bad when you perform terribly on a job. That's what all of us do. We want to adorn the doctrine. People need to say, why does he do like that? This is an man. Why is he like that? Oh, I get it. He serves Jesus. That's what it's to be all about. There needs to be integrity. You need to be true to your word. Jesus said in Matthew 5, let your yea be yea and let your nay be nay. Whatever's more than these is from the evil one. If you tell a man you're going to do something, do it. What you say is your word. You must be honest at all times. Listen to me. Be honest at all times. 2 Corinthians 8 and verse 21. The Apostle Paul mentions that very thing in verse 21, where he says, provide honorable things, not only in the sight of the Lord, but in the sight of all men. We must be honest at all times. Let me throw this out. If you make a mistake, own it. Don't try to cover it up. Just the other day, rare thing. Somebody was working on my home, made a mistake. Under the house. Comes in the house, he said, I need to tell you about something. I said, what? He said, I made a little boo-boo under your house. I said, tell me about it. He told me about it. It wasn't so bad. I was convinced it wasn't the biggest thing. He said, I can fix it if you want me to. I told him, I said, I appreciate your integrity. It's rare. Most people say it's under the house. He ain't going to be under there much. He'll never see that. He owned it. I've got a friend who had a son who worked at a place, and the bosses one day told him, they said, we've never seen anything like your son. He gets here early. He works hard all day, stays after hours sometimes, and when he makes a mistake, he comes and tells us. He comes and tells us when he makes a mistake. We're not used to that. He said, we're used to people hiding things and covering things up. You know what they did? That's what they did with that guy. Back to Titus chapter 2, it said, don't pilfer. Don't pilfer. Before I move to talking about pilfer, I want to explain this picture on the screen. This comes from the movie Courageous. Pretty good movie. This guy has finally gotten a job at a place, just thankful to have the job, but one day he's called in by the boss. He sits down in front of the boss and he tells him, he said, I'm looking for somebody to run inventory for me. He said, I want to know if you would take the job. He said, it'll mean a raise in your pay. He said, there's going to be 18 crates coming in. He said, one of those crates is going to go somewhere else. I want you to write down that you received 17 crates. Do you understand? He said, sir, you said 18 crates are coming in, but you want me to record that I received 17 crates. He said, yes, you are on my team, aren't you? Because I really can't have anybody who's not on my team. And he pauses a little bit. He said, I'll tell you what, think about it. Think about it overnight. Come back in tomorrow at 10 o'clock. Let me know your decision. He tells his wife about it. He tells her, he said, it's going to mean my job. He goes in the next morning, sits down. Javier, you made your decision? Yes, sir. He said, what's your decision? He said, sir, I cannot do what you're asking of me. He said, it would not be honorable to my God. He said, the boss said, you do understand the consequences of this, don't you? He said, yes, sir, but I can't do it. It would dishonor my God. He stuck his hand out to him and said, Javier, I want you to shake my hand. I've been looking for somebody who answered just the way you answered. I was about to get discouraged. You were the last man I ever thought. Will you take the job? It'll mean a raise in your pay. Integrity. Integrity. I will not be dishonest. Quickly, let me say something about pilfering. You know what pilfering is? Pilfering is when you take stuff from the job place that's not yours. They'll never miss it. You know, it's just a stapler here and some notebooks here. They'll never miss it. I won't take the time to read all this, but y'all remember the Johnny Cash song that was called One Piece at a Time? It says, I left Kentucky back in 49, went to Detroit working on the assembly line. The first time they had me putting wheels on Cadillacs, every day I'd watch them beauties roll by. Sometime I'd hang my head and cry because I always wanted me one that was long and black. One day I devised a plan that should be the envy of most any man. I'd sneak it out of there in my lunchbox in my hand. Now getting caught meant getting fired, but I figured I'd have it all by the time I retired. I'd have me a car worth at least 100 grand. I'd get it one piece at a time. It wouldn't cost me a dime. You'll know me when I come riding through your town. I'm going to ride around in style, going to drive everybody wild because I'll have the only one there is around. So the very next day when I punched in with my big lunchbox and with help from my friends, I left that day with a lunchbox full of gears. I've never considered myself a thief, but GM wouldn't miss just one little piece, especially if I strung it out over several years. And so he's just going to steal several pieces over several years. Some of the big pieces he's sending home with his buddy, he puts it all together. And at the end of it all, he's got a 49, 50, 51, 52, 53, 54, 55, 56, 57, 58, 59 automobile. It was a 60, 61, 62, 63, 64, 65, 66, 67, 68, 69, 70 automobile. He pilfered. One piece at a time. Last point. Be neighborly and be brotherly. We're all neighbors and brothers. And there's a principle here that we've got to be loyal to, and that is to do the neighborly thing. Look at Matthew 27 and verse 37. Excuse me, Matthew 22 and verse 37. Matthew 22 and verse 37. Jesus said when they asked what was the great commandment in the law, he said, you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your mind. This is the first and great commandment. The second is likened to it. You shall love your neighbor as yourself. Love your neighbor as yourself. Galatians 6 and verse 10, talking about brothers, says, as we have opportunity, let us do good to all men, especially those of the household of faith. Here's a principle I think is important for us to know. Out there in the work world, there are going to be some things that are legal to do, but they're not the right thing to do. It's legal, but it's not right. Because it violates the golden rule. What we call the golden rule, Luke 6 and verse 31, Jesus said this. Jesus said in Luke 6 and verse 31, just as you want men to do to you, you also do to them likewise. There's some things that are legal to do, but it's not right to do because you wouldn't want nobody to do it to you. It's not neighborly. It's not brotherly. I was talking about some of these things to my neighbor the other day, and he told me this. The lesson's soon yours. He said, my daddy once told me, listen. He said, my daddy once told me, he said, if you have to think about it, you probably don't need to do it. So here you are, you're on the job, you're thinking about something. If you have to think about it, you probably don't need to do it. And I believe we're going to find that that holds true a vast, vast amount of the time. Show care for the lives of those that are around you. Show care for your coworkers. Let them see that you love them and care for them. I don't know if I was able today to change the work ethic of the world. But if we could just have, I don't know how many adults we have out of that 200, but if all of us can just go out and do the things that we've talked about this morning on our jobs, I'm convinced the influence of that would be huge when they want to know why you are the way you are. God, help our lights to shine in the workplace. The lesson's yours. If you need to respond to the gospel this morning, we urge you to come this morning giving your life to Him, heart, soul, mind, and strength, while we stand and as we sing.